across the galaxy. This is where conspiracy on the wild side meets the perspective of a lifetime. This is the Free Zone with your host, Freeman.
Hello and welcome to the Free Zone. We have been dealing with geoengineering and weather modification for quite some time. But it's been really hard to even open people's minds as grid patterns cross our skies and people act as if they don't remember white fluffy clouds, acting as if they could always have played tic-tac-toe as a kid in the sky. It didn't happen, folks. I want to give you a little memory of what I had of chemtrails and how I became aware of this situation. Just a quick tale. Back in the 90s, as we were in the Gulf War, I was watching C-SPAN. This is before we really had the World Wide Web, and you had to get all your details and data from C-SPAN. And I'm seeing this grid pattern over the war zone, and they're announcing over the television that they are lacing the sky with barium to track the insurgents using over-the-horizon radar. This is the type of stuff you get on C-SPAN. I said, wow, that's crazy, and I moved on. It was about 1996 when I witnessed my first chemtrail, and it was actually X in the sky. Now, growing up in Orlando, watching many, many rocket launches, this was the only experience I had to call on to recognize what I was seeing, because I had never seen crossed trails like this before in the sky. And immediately my brain saying, well, they don't cross rocket launches. It just wouldn't happen. And that was my opening to the idea of chemtrails. Now, right now, about that time, 96, was the first time they announced that foreign forces were going to be flying in America's skies. Yes, NATO had started flying in America's skies just about that same time. And it wasn't long before these particulates were falling down from the sky and landing in our front yards, leaving a web-like substance that no one could really identify, but except by the symptoms. Because as you touched this spiderweb substance, suddenly you felt ill. You had flu-like symptoms. Now, the news even took it upon themselves to announce a symptom epidemic. Yes, I have no idea what that is. A symptom epidemic. What's the cause? Well, certainly, barium causes all the flu-like symptoms. So we were seemingly walking through areas of barium and gathering this heavy metal into our system and being poisoned. Well, it has taken another 20 years for us to finally compile enough data to understand more and more of what's going on with geoengineering. And tonight we are talking with Jim Lee, the climate viewer guy, to look into his compiled list, this largest volume of geoengineering and weather modification history in one massive timeline. It's complete with lists of companies, patents, sponsors, and laws. If you want to check out weather modification history, get over to climateviewer.com and check it all out. Jim has a lot of fans out there. He's been at this for a long time, nearly a decade of gathering all the data that you will need to understand this system more and more, because believe me, folks, as you're going to learn in these next couple of hours, there's way more going on than chemtrails. So please welcome Jim Lee, the climate viewer guy. Hey, Jim.
Thanks for having me, brother.
It's great. I love it. I'm so excited because this is a topic that's so near and dear to my heart. This is something that needs to be completely understood for people to realize what's literally going on this planet. I mean, we're talking things like ionospheric heaters, alpha magnetic spectrometers, very low frequency antenna arrays, along coupled with barium, strontium, aluminum, and all of these other heavy metals. And it just flies into people's heads. You know, there's no way to really get a good understanding of this data because, well, you have to be an academic, right? I mean, it helps.
Yeah. I want to immediately react to what you said about the Gulf War. Yes. It's pretty interesting that you mentioned that. One of the things that struck me about the first Gulf War was basically how they were pumping up the Republican Guard, you know, as these, you know, really badasses, and they all came out with their hands up. And that, I said to myself, how could that even be possible?
And you're talking about the bizarre surrender.
Yeah, the mass surrender. Your hands up, don't shoot. We don't even want to fight.
Right.
You know, what's going on there? And, you know, you're right about the deployment of chemtrails on the battlefield. And I want to give you two scenarios that are straight from military FOIAs that are available on my other website, which is more to the point, weathermodificationhistory.com. Climateviewer.com is my blog. It has most of my research in long form plus videos that I make on my YouTube channel. You can find me on YouTube, Jim. Just type in Jim Lee Climate Viewer. But on weathermodificationhistory.com, I have Freedom of Information Act requests, you know, straight from the U.S. Air Force, U.S. Navy. And in it, there are presentations where they literally say, we're going to create cirrus clouds to block out the sun to, you know, for two purposes, to stop spy satellite optics and to increase the effectiveness of nighttime operations. This is from their own presentations. So think about that for a second. They don't want the enemy to see them with their satellites, so they make clouds. The other one, if you make clouds at night, it may, you know, block out the moon. Suddenly our night vision is more effective. This is military, straight from military FOIAs. But here's one that's even scarier, and it kind of explains why you would see a whole bunch of people on the battlefield come up with their hands up. Have you ever heard of the gay bomb?
I have not.
So this is a real thing. And these are biological weapons, and they're deployed in battlefield use. There was a website called the sunshineproject.org, and it was deleted from the internet. I found it on archive.org, the Wayback Machine. And they were really digging deep into the U.S. biological warfare, you know, chemical corps, Army Chemical Corps, and all of the stuff they were doing. And one of the things that struck me was a term I'd never heard before, calmative. And calmatives are chemicals that they can deploy on the battlefield, like the gay bomb. And the gay bomb was one of the idea was to literally turn the enemy into homosexuals so that they were so busy screwing each other that they couldn't fight.
Can but it really affect the hormones in that way? That just seems crazy.
Google it. You won't even believe it. It's a real thing. I did an article. It used to be called Chemtrails, Calmatives, and Terrorism. I've now pretty much removed the word chemtrail from my website and, you know, rephrased it a dozen thousand ways just because there's so many, you know, negative connotations with the word that people assume you mean this, or they assume you mean that. So now it's called biological warfare and calmatives and terrorism. But regardless, in it, you know, I talk about those calmatives. And, you know, they literally have a thing that was from the Department of Homeland Security where they were talking about how to deal post 9/11 with terrorism, you know, terrorists on flights. And one of their examples was called Narco Airways. And in it, they have a diagram of a chemical dispenser inside the cab of, you know, the main cabin of the plane that would spray calmatives into the cab, either knock people out or make them just chill out. I don't know, whatever chemical they decided to put. But these are real things, you know, biological warfare tools for multiple purposes. The most nefarious is what they call non-lethal warfare. And this comes from what's called the Joint Non-Lethal Warfare Directorate, JNLWD. And if you really look into it, it is my personal opinion that they did deploy, you know, some form of calmative on the battlefield that just literally made them say, you know, screw it, I'm done. I can't handle this. In addition, they were using psychological warfare with, you know, audio devices and a whole lot of other things.
Putting voices in their heads.
Yeah. I mean, V2K, all that stuff. Well, you know, things like, I mean, if you look at the MK Ultra stuff, you know, they did stuff like crying babies and just the sound of a crying baby 24 hours a day on a battlefield is enough to drive anyone.
I quit.
I'm dying. I'm done. But, you know, dropping leaflets and then, you know, using all kinds of auditory, you know, interruption in addition to lacing the battlefield with chemicals, in addition to making cirrus cloud banks that would, you know, help their night vision. And I mean, in war, all things, you know, are on the table. So I just had to throw that out there. One of the other chemical trails that was in use was something called Agent Green. And this is called F-oxysporum. It's a fungus or a mold. And it was part of what was called Plan Columbia. And this is just as recent as the 90s, like around the same time you were talking about. And the U.S. military was spraying this, you know, biological weapon, Agent Green, all over the cocaine crops in Colombia. Well, that was, you know, may have sounded like a good idea, but that F-oxysporum ended up migrating its way all the way back to Texas and was being found in not only our grain, but our livestock. So
always unintended consequences.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's Agent Orange all over again. They just, you know, renamed Agent Orange Roundup. And now we have forest fires all up and down California because of what's called hack and squirt, more so than, you know, the directed energy weapons. You know, a lot of people want to, you know, that's all you hear on YouTube is directed energy weapons are causing all of this.
I've never heard of hack and squirt.
Hack and squirt is where you go, and if you go to YouTube and type in hack and squirt, and it'll blow your freaking mind. And what you do is you take a hatchet and you go around the base of a tree and you chop in through the bark, and guess what you spray in there? Roundup. So they actually kill the trees while they're standing. And they do this, there's, you know, California legislation about clearing the canopies and, you know, all that. But then they have the environmentalist laws that won't allow them to go then remove the dead trees. So that's why you see all these videos of trees burning from the inside, because they were literally rotted from the inside because, you know, hack and squirt is widely used all up and down the West Coast. And yeah, this is just something I've learned recently. So, you know, but here's an interesting, let's tie this back to weather modification. In the 1800, the very first entry in my timeline on weathermodificationhistory.com was a guy named James Pollard Espy. And he was known as the Storm King. He made the first U.S. Navy weather map. So very prominent meteorologist. He proposed back in like 1836, burning massive forest fires on the West Coast to seed rainfall on the East Coast. And that's exactly what's going on today.
It's working.
It certainly is. So when you're seeing that they're having blizzard conditions on the East Coast and massive forest fires on the West Coast, there's a direct correlation. In addition to that, cloud seeding, which was invented in 1946 by Vincent Schaefer, Irving Langmuir, and Bernard Vonnegut at the GE labs, 1 year later, that was used to try to steer a hurricane. And that hurricane was a tropical storm. They seeded it, and then it changed colors, changed directions, and slammed right into Georgia, killing a person and doing $3.2 million worth of damage. And then just a little while later, it was used as a weapon of war in Vietnam in Operation Popeye. So, you know, cloud seeding in and of itself, you know, something that started out as we're just going to make rain was turned into, was used to steer hurricanes in less than a year after it was invented, and less than 20 years after it was invented, Henry Kissinger, the CIA, the U.S. Air Force, and the U.S. Navy, and only 20 to 30 people knew about it. Not even the Secretary of Defense knew about the weather warfare in Vietnam. And as a result, there was a weather warfare ban passed in 1978. It's called the Environmental Modification Convention, or the Prohibition for the Hostile Use of Environmental Modification Techniques. Thank God they shortened that to NMOD. So the point I'm trying to make here is that after it was invented in 1946, there's an even littler known man named Irving P. Crick. And I learned this in a real odd way. There's this Disney film about, you know, steering hurricanes. It's pretty prominent on YouTube. I can't think of the name of it right now, but it was made in 1959. And it's an animated, short about one day, because of meteorology satellites, we will be able to control the weather. And they talked about firing rockets into hurricanes and all this stuff. And I was like, who the heck was the, you know, gave them these ideas? And I looked at the credits and it said, you know, technical advisor, Irving Crick. And I looked the guy up and it turns out he invented what's called the ground-based cloud seeder. So not flying planes to spew silver iodide into clouds, literally a propane tank, you know, with a burner on top of it. And they just put the silver iodide in the flame and it comes from the ground up over mountains. They call this snowpack augmentation or orographic cloud seeding. Since 1949, ground-based cloud seeders literally cover every single mountain from Canada to Arizona along the Rockies, all through California and all of that. They turn on every year in October and they shut down usually around March. And the reason why is because they try to put as much snow on top of those mountains as possible so that in the springtime they have, you know, runoff, you know, melt water, because basically the West Coast doesn't have enough water to support the number of people that are already there. So, you know, millions and billions of dollars are spent on this. The Sacramento Municipal Utility District, SMUD, that dam that broke in Sacramento?
I can't think of the name of it off
the top of my head, but basically they had this dam, you know, overflow and then it flooded. Well, they hadn't even fixed the dam yet, and Sacramento Municipal Utility District was offering $900,000 for cloud seeding for the next 3 years. So that's the kind of money we're talking about involved in this. And that's just Sacramento. And what ends up happening is we have these ground-based cloud seeding generators that span the entire Rocky Mountains. We have forest fires, and all of this is producing cloud seeds. And the problem is that if you produce too many seeds in the sky, rain will not fall, because the raindrops can't get big enough to fall. You got to have the right mixture of seeds and water. So what ends up happening is, because of all the cloud seeding activities in California, plus all the aircraft traffic and the chemtrails, they're putting so many aerosols or cloud seeds or cloud condensation nuclei, CCN, as the scientists would call it, into the sky that they are over seeding the sky, and that'll actually shut rain off. But the problem is eventually enough moisture is going to stick to all that crap. So while they're trying to cloud seed all of the West Coast, all of that material is making its way towards the East Coast. And that's why we end up with basketball size hail, torrential floods, blizzards. And I honestly believe that if the states on the East Coast understood this, there'd be lawsuits galore, because they wouldn't be calling FEMA. They'd be calling California and the Desert Research Institute and, you know, Northern American Weather Consultants and Weather Modification Incorporated and the companies that are doing it and the people who are funding it. And that's just the reality of the situation, that, yes, the forest fires are aggravating all this. They may be intentional. But we have people who are intentionally cloud seeding the entire West Coast, causing biblical floods on the East Coast, and nobody knows. And this has been going on since 1948.
Disney's been talking about it since 57.
Yeah, that was the Disney film I was talking about. And, yeah. You know, that's where I learned about Irving P. Crick. Well, now Irving P. Crick's son is my friend on Facebook. And he said to me, "You're the only guy on the entire internet who's ever talked about my daddy. And I've learned more about my dad from you than I did from him."
Huh. Yes. That's the way this goes now. You know, we take in all this data and little things. And the fact that we can still just, you know, access the 1957 Disney documentaries and then be able to use this amazing World Wide Web to just really dig in and get all the data is, you know, that's our brave new world. And here we are, just citizens, and you've got this epic geoengineering voluminous database for everyone to go and see all of the layers and layers of what we're talking about with weather modification and geoengineering, because it's, you know, it's so much more than chemtrails, as we're going to get to. Yeah, that's an amazing story. And I'm not at all shocked that it was Disney propaganda that led you to that. We can probably go off on that.
I'm probably the only person that read the credits.
Right.
You know what I mean? I'm just nosy like that. And, you know, it was fascinating to learn that, that, you know, basically what he invented has turned into, you know, a multi-billion dollar industry.
Right.
And now it's so common that, you know, as a result of Operation Popeye, the Vietnam thing, a couple things happened. They passed a law in 1972 called the Weather Modification Reporting Act of 1972. So from, let me give you the funny version of it. They did weather warfare over Vietnam. Jack Anderson, reporter of the century, saw a note on Lyndon Johnson's desk, and he said, and it said something about continue weather modification operations over Laos. And this was part of the Pentagon papers that originally got released. And then, you know, the international community found out that we did weather modification over Laos without asking their permission. So that's really where it all started. And there were a series of congressional hearings, two of which are available on weathermodificationhistory.com and climateviewer.com. The third hearing is still classified to this day. And as a result, what happened was you had a whole bunch of bald head, old white dudes, you know, back in the 70s going, "We can control the weather?"
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, let alone that we just did weather warfare over Vietnam and that Henry Kissinger and the CIA kept it a secret from even the Secretary of Defense. You know, they freaked out about all that. So they were like, well, we need to know more. I mean, we need to know more now. So they passed this Weather Modification Reporting Act of 1972. And from that point forward, if you're going to modify the weather in America, you have to fill out two forms and send them to NOAA. So I regularly will call up NOAA and get a copy of those to see who's paying for it, where it happened, and all of that. they followed that up with something called the Weather Modification Policy Act of 1976, which led to a full report, full disclosure of weather modification activities. And it was called Weather Modification Problems Program. I always butcher this one. Weather Modification Programs, Problems, Policy, and Potential. It's 748 pages long. And it literally lists out every single federally funded or otherwise weather modification activity in America up to that date. So
in America,
in America, just in America,
yeah.
You know what I mean? And, you know, a lot of people will go, well, see, this proves chemtrails. And I'm like, you didn't read any of it. I read all 700 pages. but regardless, you know, it was a full accounting of every single weather modification activity in America. And we're now at a point where history has completely, you know, repeated itself. We've got a whole bunch of, you know, old white dudes with bald heads, and of course other people, you know, from different ethnicities now. That's a good thing. But regardless, none of them know what's going on. And the military, once again, even though weather warfare was banned in 1978, they're back at it, because I have FOIAs from 1994 saying exactly that. Then they did Owning the Weather in 2025, which was a think piece by the Air Force College. It was written in 1995 and 96. And they talked about how they could, you know, take advantage of the universities, the researchers, and the companies that are modifying the weather, and even the ionospheric heaters like HARP, to study all of that information. So every bit of it gets funneled to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. They're a member of the Weather Modification Association. You can go to the Weather Modification Association's website and look at their corporate roster. And on there, you will see something that says NASICDEKA, NASICDEKA. And it says Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. So the reason why is because they compile all of this information so that they can use it as a weapon of war, despite the weather warfare ban. And that's really my greatest concern. You know, when I'm arguing with Chris Follin, who's the current director of HARP, I'm saying to him, look, you know, the Department of Defense, the DOD, DARPA, Air Force Geophysics Lab, and the Office of Naval Research invented the thing you're playing with right now. And they sold it to you because they don't need it anymore, because they got better ways to do the things that they were doing with it.
Right.
So your research will be used as a weapon, whether you like it or not. And that's my main concern with all of these weather modification technologies that I see, is that there are people who are using these things called cloud ionizers, and they're basically cloud seeding with electricity. The U.S. Department of Agriculture just recently got a guy who's an ex-Monsanto dude to take an electrostatic sprayer and spray electrified water over Texas in the cloud seeding experiment. So the government is still involved in paying for weather modification research with electrified water. You know, everywhere you look, they're doing it. And there's no accountability, there's no transparency. So what I've proposed, and you can see it on climateviewer.com/NMOD, that's ENMOD, is something called the Environmental Modification Accountability Act. And what I'm trying to get here is, you know, something, you know what I mean? Like, we cannot end the practice of weather modification. We won't be able to fully stop geoengineering, but the best we can hope for is there's a law already on the books that says you can't do weather warfare. The problem is there's no way to catch somebody doing it.
Yeah. It's like the powers of God, you know, you can't tell where it comes from.
Right. It plausible deniability, right?
Yeah.
God did it. We didn't do it. So what I'm suggesting is the exact same thing they did with atomic bombs. They passed something called the Limited Test Ban Treaty. And what it said was you can no longer detonate nuclear explosions in the upper atmosphere or above ground. And, you know, laws and pieces of paper are fine, but if you don't have a way to catch somebody violating those laws, they're kind of useless. Yes. So what they did was they created something called the International Monitoring System, IMS. It's run by the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty Organization, CTBTO. On my map, climateviewer.org, I have 2,615 nuclear detonations mapped out, which the CTBTO actually used as a reference on their website. And what they do is they have things like infrasound recorders and seismic recorders to look for the signatures of a nuclear detonation. That's how we know when North Korea is doing a nuclear test, because these infrasound recorders are set out, you know, in triangulation and all that. Oh, you know, the signal hit this sensor at this time and this sensor at that time. And now we can triangulate right about where the detonation occurred to pretty accurate. So they have a way to trust but verify. The problem with weather warfare is there's no system to test that. There's a law in the book saying you can't do weather warfare, and there's no way to catch somebody in the act.
Right.
So that's what I'm proposing is two parts. One, that what we did in America, the Weather Modification Reporting Act of 1972, that be a worldwide thing. That worldwide, anybody who wants to modify the weather or do any kind of atmospheric experimentation has to give prior notice. And I've said a minimum of 48 hours. When I proposed this to Ken Caldera and David Keith, are you familiar with the names? They're geoengineers.
Yeah.
Anyway, they both agreed that this was a good idea. Dr. James Roger Fleming, who is the top historian on weather modification in the world, I interviewed him at the 21st Conference on Planned and Inadvertent Weather Modification. I just went there this January. It was at the AMS, the American Meteorological Society's 98th annual meeting. And he said, what I'm doing is probably one of the most important things out there right now. And this law would require prior notice so that if somebody goes and does cloud seeding, cloud ionization, ionospheric modification, geoengineering, any of that, and then they kill somebody, or if they destroy your crops, that at the very least you can sue them in a court of law. But more importantly, that we can tell the difference between hostile weather warfare and what they classify as benign weather modification, because the NMOD treaty doesn't ban weather modification. It bans hostile or military weather modification. So what we do is we say, everybody in the world, you have to tell us that you're modifying the weather before you do it in case you hurt somebody, period. And that's available on a public website before you do it, so everybody knows same time, no more secrecy. And what that does is it says anybody that does not tell us is obviously hostile. So now we can differentiate who's doing weather warfare and who's not. The second part is catching them in the act, because obviously they're not going to tell. You know, and the main culprits obviously would be the United States, Russia, and China. So in order to catch the main weather warfare culprits, USA, Russia, China, in the act, we need a sensor network just like they did for nuclear weapons. And that sensor network would need to monitor atmospheric aerosols, electromagnetic radiation, all of that stuff. So for the verification side, I proposed two parts. One, that all the government sensors of the world be combined into a weather warfare detection network. But two, more importantly, that I'm trying to build it myself, that we have a citizen powered one as well. And the reason is simple. During the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear meltdown, they shut off the EPA RadNet. So we had a government system to detect radiation, and we had a nuclear detonation that was raining cesium-137 and iodine-131 all over America, and they just shut off the network that would have told everybody how much has fallen in the rain. And that's unacceptable. So what's to stop the governments or the powers that be, the technocrats, from just shutting off their weather warfare detection system whenever they want?
Right.
So we need to build one ourselves. So that's what Climate Viewer is. The idea is to build a local climate viewer for your backyard that has a camera pointed at the sky that can detect EMF radiation. So if there's ELF or extremely low frequency waves, ultra low frequency waves, gravitational waves, you know, things that people can use to modify the weather on a large scale, or rain samples with spectroscopy. Well, that's a word. So that it actually tests what's falling in your rain, as well as all the normal weather, you know, monitoring stuff that you would have, you know, like wind, barometric pressure, all that stuff. But more importantly, the camera, the EMF, and the rain samples, and then take all of that information and stream it to the internet live and put it on a map like I have at climateviewer.org. So it's a two-part system, transparency, and then a citizen-powered network of sensors to detect when people are screwing with the weather. And if you didn't tell the international board, you know, you didn't fill out your report and say, hey, I'm screwing with the weather in this location at this time, and then we catch you, you can be held accountable. You just violated NMOD. That's my big solution to all of this. And I'm hoping to get more and more support for it. And I'm already gotten the support of several prominent geoengineers, the world's top historian on weather modification. And I just recently spoke to on the phone, the CEO of a company who steers atmospheric rivers with electromagnetic radiation. And his company was called Acquiesce. So that's another thing that nobody ever talks about. Everybody talks about steering the jet stream, but there are companies that now are claiming to steer atmospheric rivers or tropospheric rivers, and they're rivers in the sky. So one of which is Acquiesce. The other one's called Climate Control Global Trading LLC. And they're based out of like the UAE or Dubai or whatever. But these guys literally say, we can divert the entire path of clouds using electromagnetic radiation from the ground and steer the rivers of the sky wherever we want. And when I was speaking with the CEO of the company, who I've been following for 6 years, writing articles and videos about him, he was very blunt when he said that he's, you know, was approached by the US military and the Department of Homeland Security, and that he's not cool with that. And I told him, you know, I pitched him my idea about, you know, transparency and verification. And he was like, I'm down for that. Like instantly.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, he's like, I don't want them to use my technology. And I was like, dude, if you really think the CIA hasn't already hacked your computer and read every single thing you've ever written about this, you're delusional.
Absolutely.
And he agreed with me. He was like, you know, you're right. I never really thought about it that way. I said, so the only solution is to be able to catch them in the act when they use your technology. And the only way to do that is that you got to be honest about how your technology works so that we can look for those signals and know when it's happening. So that's really the big picture, is that, you know, we have a whole lot of conspiracies that just abound, and nobody thinking about this pragmatically. Like, how do we really deal with weather warfare when there's so much going on, you know, just out there in the public, you know, that, you know, you can go to weathermodificationhistory.com and it'll blow your freaking mind. But people aren't being honest about it. You know what I mean? So instead, people are more attracted to the fear porn that's associated with it. You know, HAARP is blamed for everything.
Right, right. You don't need to prove it.
Yeah. I mean, HAARP caused all of the fires in California.
Oh, I know.
You know, HAARP is steering the jet stream. And I'm like, no, you know, steering atmospheric rivers is way more you can't talk, you know, sanely to most people about this, because most of the people who are interested in the topic don't really want to get it. And the politician, go ahead.
It's a lot to get.
It is. I mean, it really is. And I mean, I've been doing this for 8 years now, and, you know, I learn something new every single day. And just trying to, you know, get people to see the big picture is very tough, let alone the fact that, you know, convincing them that it is even happening. You know what I mean? I go into gas stations. I say, do you know that people can actually control the weather? And, you know, 99%, there's that 1% where they're like, yeah, man, I've heard of HAARP, you know?
Right. Immediately. No, sir. But, no ice cat. No, you
know. Yeah. No, they don't know anything about incoherent scatter radars or Jicamarca Peru or Puerto Rico's enhanced high frequency. They don't know anything about any of the other ones, but everybody, you know, the occasional person's heard of HAARP. But like, nobody knows about, you know, the fact that the most prominent, you know, tool for screwing with weather is cloud seeding. And it's the only one that's ever been documented to be used as a weapon of warfare. Right. So, you know, that just strikes me as ironic. I got one for you. You probably never heard of.
Go for it.
Have you ever heard of Project Nile Blue?
Nile Blue, I have not.
So the CIA, once again, at the same time that Operation Popeye was going on in Vietnam, the CIA was doing a rain embargo on Cuba. So instead of making mud, not war, which was the slogan in Vietnam, they were trying to increase the rainfall from the monsoon. And we've all seen the videos of soldiers up to their waist in mud and water. So it worked to, you know, basically make the Ho Chi Minh Trail impassable. Well, they did the exact opposite to Cuba. They shut the rain off. And what they did was they did cloud seeding over the Gulf of Mexico to make all of the water in the clouds rain out in the ocean before they reached the island. And the goal was to destroy the sugar crops that Castro had. And this is documented. I mean, I've got multiple newspaper articles about it and stuff from the CIA's own reading room FOIAs. About Nile Blue, and, you know, firsthand accounts from people who were in it. This is not just limited to the 60s and 70s. When Chernobyl happened, and, you know, the Chernobyl nuclear meltdown occurred, and a huge radioactive cloud was headed for Moscow. So what did they do? They did cloud seeding over Belarus to make all of that radioactive material rain out before it reached Moscow. So they shut the rain off.
And poor Belarus.
And that's why if you go to climateviewer.org and you look at, or any other website, and look at the actual where all of the radiation is from Chernobyl, what you're going to see is two big circles, one around the reactor and another one around Belarus. And the reason is because that's they you know, overseeded the sky to stop the rain from coming to Moscow. Now we flash forward to the Beijing Olympics.
Yep.
China used rockets to keep the rain from coming over the Olympic Village because they basically built a big dome, you know, a big stadium with no roof. So they were firing rockets constantly at these clouds to make it rain before it got there. Any clouds that still had water vapor left in them that could have rained on the Olympics, they introduced liquid nitrogen and other chemicals to freeze that until it passed over and then let it rain on the other side. So weather modification can be used to create drought. And now we come to the day where Iran, Brigadier General from Iran, says that Israel and Europe and neighboring countries are stealing Iran's clouds. And I'm listening to Rush Limbaugh, and he says, you know, I talked to the head meteorologist at the EIB, and this is just not possible. This is not even a thing. You know, we can't even predict when clouds are going to occur, which is true. but he's completely ignorant of the history because, you know, I just gave you three, you know, well-documented cases where they shut the rain off. They stopped rain from falling on a country. So when Iran says that the European Union and countries nearby, including Israel, are stealing their rain, you know, they didn't word it so well. They said cloud theft. But regardless, there's truth to that. The United Arab Emirates is doing something called the Rainfall Enhancement Program, where they're giving out $2 and $3 million prizes to, you know, anybody in the world who can come there and make it rain on Dubai and the UAE. So they literally are stealing the rain from Iran. It hit 156 degrees.
No way.
In Iran. Oh, man. 2011, President Ahmadinejad said, Europe is stealing our rain. He said it again in 2012. And then this year, a brigadier general from Iran said the same thing, that they're stealing our rain.
Right.
That's weather warfare.
Right.
I mean, period, point blank, end of story. So it is going on to this day. And the only way to prove it, and you could say, well, it's inadvertent, it's accidental. You know, people are doing cloud seeding all across the European Union, just like they are doing in America. And it's much harder for me to find that information because I don't speak French and Italian and Russian and all of that. But they're doing cloud seeding just like we are. And there's only so much water in the sky. And everybody wants every drop they can get. So that's what the water wars is about, the blue gold rush, as it's been termed. Ex-Colonel David Kaczynski from CyBlue, he wrote a paper, and in it he said, water will be to the next century what oil was to the last.
Scary thought.
And that's the truth. You know, it's Mad Max, the new Mad Max movie where, you know, they're literally sucking the water out of humans.
Right.
There's a government website that was up for a while. It's on Wayback Machine now. You can see it, Water 2025. That number keeps coming up over and over again, by the way.
Yes.
Because it coincides with a grand solar minimum for the people who follow all of that stuff, which means there will be weather chaos, to say the least. But they actually had a map, which was a conflict, a water conflict map in America, where there could literally be fights and wars over water in 2025. And, you know, so while they talk about climate change and they talk about global warming, the one thing that geoengineering, cloud seeding, cloud ionization, all of these things, global warming and climate change, all have in common is this is really about water. And that's why I wrote a paper called Technocracy and the Water Wars and Replacing the Natural Water Cycle. Are you familiar with what technocrats are?
Technocrats. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, in essence.
Yeah, so the best book, period, and I promote him as much as I can. He's a friend of mine, Patrick Wood, is Technocracy Rising.
Right.
If you want to read a book that'll blow your freaking mind, read this book. And it'll explain everything going on today from anything with the word sustainable in it, sustainable right. development, sustainable this, anything with the word smart in it,
right?
Smart meter, smart city, smart this, smart that. Uh-huh. Technocrats seek to control the world, have a one world government that is run by engineers and the scientific method.
Right.
And they would have policies and procedures that manage all resources of the planet.
Human habitat zones.
Yeah. So that they can have what they call a balanced load.
Right.
And this started back in the 30s, you know, with guys like the Council of Foreign Relations, the Club of Rome, Trilateral Commission, Bilderberger Group. These are technocrats. And what they do is they try to use technology to control resources and people.
Right.
And circumvent international law or, you know, local laws to impose their technocratic one world government. And that's what they're doing. They're using climate change as a boogeyman so that they can do geoengineering. There was something called the Integrated Assessment of Geoengineering Proposals, IAGP. And in it, they basically said, look, if we do what your guys are talking about, stratospheric aerosol injection, solar radiation management, all that sort of stuff, that it's going to alter rainfall patterns worldwide. And what's going to happen is the northern hemisphere will get wetter, and the southern hemisphere, where all the brown people are, will get drier. So they came up with this thing called the Solar Radiation Management Governance Initiative, SRMGI. And basically, I was a member of Ken Caldera. Ken Caldera and David Keith are the two top geoengineers on the planet for a reason. Because they get to give out Bill Gates money. Bill Gates has a fund called the Fund for Innovative Climate Energy Research, FICER, F-I-C-E-R. And Bill Gates dumps a bunch of millions of dollars into it, and Ken Caldera and David Keith, you know, basically scientists come to them begging for grants, and then they dole out the grants. And Ken Caldera worked with Dr. Evil, Lowell Wood, Edward Teller, the inventor of the hydrogen bomb, and Roderick Hyde. In 1994, in Lawrence Livermore National Lab, they proposed the current model of geoengineering. And this is as a result of the Mount Pinatubo eruption. And that's where they really started to push for spraying particulates in the sky to block out sunlight. And that's solar radiation management, geoengineering, stratospheric aerosol injection. They wrote a paper about climate stabilization, long-term climate stabilization using geoengineering. And then their second paper, they had this guy named Ken Caldera. He came along and made a computer model. And they said, well, you take our idea, feed it into a computer, and see what happens. And Ken Caldera did that. And he's like, well, it looks like everything worked out pretty good. The planet cooled down and plant life was pretty happy about it. And then they wrote a third paper without his ass. And, you know, here we are today. You know, a couple years later, Paul Crutzen, a Nobel Prize winner, you know, signed off on it and said, this is a good idea. And ever since, they've been, you know, proposing all kinds of new ways to geoengineer the planet. But what we all know is that geoengineering's already happening, and we see it over our houses every day. Right. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Making us all sick.
Yeah. I mean, and that's what, go ahead.
Cause we're wrapping up this first hour. It goes by so fast. I'm wondering how we could get involved in your project of weather modification detection and how we can help support your efforts here in getting.
Well, two things, of course, you know, everything I do at night after my kids go to bed, you know, usually 8 o'clock till sometimes 1 and 2 in the morning. I don't sleep really. You can support me at patreon.com/climateviewer. But really, and patreon.com/climateviewer, or give a one-time donation, paypal.me/climateviewer. But to make this law a reality is actually surprisingly easy. I've already been in touch with a couple of policy makers, a Republican representative from Washington who will remain nameless, and a couple international scientists. But it really needs to be written down in law format. And then once it's written down in, you know, legalese, and you read it through and they haven't changed anything to really, you know, make me PO'd. All that has to happen to make an addendum to NMOD is that it has to be taken to our State Department and get one person to agree from the State Department to take it to the UN Security Council. They take one vote, and if the vote passes, it is law worldwide.
Wow.
And I've done my homework on this. I've been thinking for 7 years, what the heck could I do? And going on a state by state basis, that would be good too. A lady named Jolie Diane came up with the House bill on the Geoengineering Act of 2017 in Rhode Island. It almost got passed, and then it was thrown back to committee or whatever. But those kinds of things aren't going to have enough teeth. You know what I mean? Like going on a state by state basis, there may be some kind of way to be effective about this, but this is a worldwide problem. And we already have precedent. There's a law on the books that, you know, all these countries have already signed.
Right.
What needs to happen is that it needs to have teeth. And I've got, you know, research papers from Harvard, MIT, even the research institute in Pakistan, who's citing weathermodificationhistory.com, you know, saying, look, this needs to happen. So what really needs to happen is I need to get people. And right now I've been trying to get support from other scientists who are in the field of geoengineering, weather modification, and that sort of stuff, to support the act, because having them come with me to the State Department and say, look, you know, we do this and we even think this is a good idea because we'll get less death threats.
Right.
You know, that's all that's necessary. It needs to be really written up well so that it can be, I mean, this is what all companies do. Have you heard of ALEC, the American Legislative Economic Council? ALEC is a group that literally wines and dines senators and gives them what's called draft legislation. And I'll give you an example. I worked for a company called Corrections Corporation of America. I was a prison guard. And they're one of the second largest private prison in the world, next to Geo Group. And they house inmates, and they are a publicly traded company. So the worst of the worst inmates, after you've, you know, killed an officer and then been put into a supermax, and you only get 1 hour a day out of your cell, and then you kill another officer, they don't like having it in the newspaper, so they pay private prisons to house them. Also at the prison I was at was, you know, U.S. Marshals, Trans Corps, the Pascua-Yaqui Indian Reservation. And we had a female unit, which I never wanted to go near because, my God, it was the worst experience of my life. But regardless,
no more for sure.
Yeah. But regardless, CCA and Geo Group came up with a law called SB 1070. And they, you know, send it to Alec, and Alec whined and dined the Arizona senators, and they passed it. And it basically was saying that police had to check IDs of immigrants, you know, for their immigration status. And, you know, of course, you know, the left lost it over this law. And, you know, I don't even remember what happened with the law, if it's even still on the books, but regardless, it passed. And the purpose of it was that it would directly financially benefit those companies because they were housing INS, which is now ICE. It was Immigration Nationalization Service. When I worked there, we had, you know, literally families in cells. You know what I mean? In the town I worked in, Florence, Arizona, and Coolidge and Casa Grande in the middle of Arizona, there's like 12 CCA prisons, and like 9 of them serviced ICE. And so by getting this legislation passed, which the prisons wrote, they would actually get more heads in beds, which would benefit their bottom line. It's the same idea. We just need to write the law and then go convince a senator to take that law to the State Department and say, this needs to happen. The State Department takes it to the UN Security Council. They have one vote, and suddenly worldwide, every single person on the planet who's screwing with the sky, if they don't tell in advance, they have broken the law. We can sue them. All kinds of stuff can happen. So that's my big plan.
Yeah, I know this is something everybody would want to get behind. I know this has been something, it's almost as if chemtrails are the gateway conspiracy. You know, it's something you can point to and say, look, we didn't have grids in the sky as a kid. I remember lovely puffy white clouds and none of this. And so it's something that a lot of people are able to get behind because they don't want to sound foolish, and they can use climateviewer.com and have all the data to say, this is it. This is what's actually happening. And if we don't realize that we're going to give the planet, the control of the planet, over to these technocrats, and that they're going to start utilizing AI and everything else to do what the computer algorithm determines is the best way to keep humanity fed and watered while not destroying the planet, and we're going to all have to live under this rigid technocratic society where obviously they want 2/3 of the population gone just to start out. That's where we need to, you know, this is perfect. This idea is exactly what everybody has been looking for. And here you've been sitting up late nights after your daughter's asleep, getting your, you know, this amazing website together. Guys, you got to go over to climateviewer.com and just look. I mean, just start digging in, just click, click, click wherever you want, because everything's going to give you so much data. You can look into the top 10 technologies to own the weather and start to understand the integrated systems and how all of these things play together. We're going to talk about some more of these systems on the other side when we get to the members section. So you definitely want to come over to freemantv.com as well and become a subscriber, help support this show. And if you want a little piece of this history, not to boast too much, but I did produce the first documentary on chemtrails and the first documentary on HAARP ever. And if you want to own that, come over to freemantv.com, hit the shop button, and grab a DVD, help support the show, and get a little piece of history. Because
I'm going to definitely do that.
Nice. You know, it was something that I had to get off my chest, you know, and that's awesome. but it, you know, it, this is something that it opens doorways for everyone into this world that is quickly the iron fist with the velvet glove closing down around us. And they've been telling us about it all along, but it's just so hard for people to understand these technologies and realize that this is all right here, right now. And of course, the propaganda arm is leading everybody off in the wrong direction so that they're worried about climate change and trying to enact the regulations that will allow these technocrats to take over our world. So it's all really ass backwards. And so
yeah, I like to say, don't blame climate change, blame the climate changers.
There you go. Exactly. This is Jim Lee, the climate viewer guy. And he, man, Jim, this was such an informative and inspiring show to lead us to active participation in this, to really get this thing going, because we all want it. We all have been talking about this for a decade or more, and trying to say, look, we need to control this. We need to have a way to regulate it. And these guys are acting with the powers of God, and no one can tell who's doing what. I mean, was it Russia? Was it America causing Hurricane Katrina to crash into New Orleans? You know, did anybody even notice that on that very same day, over the horizon radar left out of the Gulf of Texas to go down around South America and set itself up next to the HARP system? What is an over the horizon radar? How does this all work together? We're going to get more into that on the other side. So thank you all so much for tuning in, and I hope you gathered a lot from this and took notes on all of the different things that Jim's been laying out there. But if you don't have the notes, go over to climateviewer.com and get them, because these are the lists, you know, the people that are doing it. You've always wondered, I know, because I have, and thankfully Jim spends late nights up gathering all this data and putting it together out here on the World Wide Web for all of us to be able to utilize and work on our own weather modification detection system to really hold these people accountable. Jim, thank you so much.
It's been epic so far, man. I'm looking to the second part.
Me too, because it always gets a little weirder in the members sections, folks. I feel a little freer in there. And, it's just us and the family. So come join the family, help support the show. Come over to freemantv.com, hit subscribe, and just jump on. And as always, we need to thank associate producer Steve Mercer for bringing us these amazing guests. If you have any comments or guest suggestions, send them to associate producer Steve at producersteve@freemantv.com. And you're going to love it. 14 years of backlog in there for you to get all of this. And check out Jim's YouTube channel for sure, because you're going to get so much, and you will find out, is Jim Lee, the climate viewer guy, a psyop? We'll talk about that on the other side as well. I create my own conspiracies too. So guys, thank you so much for tuning in, and we will see you next week.